Good evening. In the news tonight, a lack of coordination between New York City agencies comes to light at a public safety committee hearing at the City Council.
And I don't understand why none of us knew about this before we read about it in the news.
The U.S. Attorney's Office fails to indict police officer Richard Haste in the murder of Romarley Graham in the Bronx.
We feel like this is a complete outrage.
And on International Women's Day, a woman's access to abortion clinics is in focus.
Abortion is medical, not political.
With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Monday, International Women's Day, March 8th, 2016. Romarley Graham's parents, the Justice Committee, and Communities United for Police Reform were in a meeting today with U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara and many of his staff members. Bharara said they decided not to move forward with Romarley Graham's case. They will not convene a federal grand jury. Yulsan Leem is with the Justice Committee. She says this decision is completely inconsistent with the facts, and it shows the Justice Department doesn't value black lives.
Romarley Graham was unarmed. He was casually walking home, walking into his door. Officers forced their way in without a warrant or probable cause and shot and killed this young man in front of his grandmother and six-year-old brother. He was not committing a crime. He was completely unarmed. He was doing nothing wrong.
Romarley Graham's family is understandably upset by the decision. Leem says it's another way the system has victimized them and continues their trauma and pain. While the Department of Justice was the last recourse to bring criminal charges against NYPD officer Richard Haste and all officers responsible, the family and police reform advocates have been asking that Richard Haste and other officers involved be fired from the NYPD.
We actually found out today in the meeting with U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara that Commissioner Bratton has been lying to the City Council. He told the City Council recently, several City Council members, that Preet Bharara's office had told him to wait on bringing departmental charges against these officers. The U.S. Attorney today confirmed that he, in fact, never said that to Commissioner Bratton. So we see that Commissioner Bratton has been lying and stalling in this case. Our demand right now is that he immediately fire all officers responsible, and we're also holding the mayor accountable for this because he has the power to put pressure on Bratton to do this.
Officer Richard Haste shot Romarley Graham in the chest in his bathroom in his family's Bronx home. The officer said he fired because he thought he was going to be shot, but no weapons were found in the apartment. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Beginning yesterday, a change in how low-level offenses are being treated in Manhattan. People are not to be arrested in the borough for littering, drinking alcohol on the street, riding between cars, or taking up two seats on a subway. Instead of arrests, people will get summonses. Manhattan District Attorney Cy Vance.
The goal of this is to try to focus on resolution of these cases without having to adjourn them to the summons part, but okay. At the arraignment part. That's the goal in Manhattan.
Vance addressed Councilmember Vanessa Gibson, chair of the City Council's Committee on Public Safety, today. He sat alongside DAs from the other four boroughs.
In terms of my colleagues here, I will say, each of us, as law enforcement agency heads, makes operational decisions that reflect our assessment of how to best utilize resources in our individual boroughs. D.A. Thompson, a year ago or so, made a very principled decision that he was going to handle marijuana cases in a way that he felt supported his view of fairness and use of resources. That was a policy which I think has worked. I think it's probably worked very well for Ken. But in my case, I wanted to wait until I had the police department on board on the issue of whether or not to charge individuals, because I felt that for Manhattan, it was going to be better to have the police and the prosecutors working in concert.
But according to Brooklyn DA Ken Thompson, who decriminalized marijuana possession in his borough, the way he handled that change was very different from the way Manhattan dealt with their changes in policy. Neither he nor other DAs got a heads up on changes in Manhattan.
Well, I think it's first important to clarify what happened with the marijuana policy that I created in 2014. it was different than the process that happened in Manhattan. And what I mean by that is, Cy is absolutely right. Each of us were independently elected, and we have to do what's in the best interest of our borough. However, the other night, it was March, but we got an October surprise, the rest of the DAs in the city. We learned about this important new policy shift by reading the press release. There was no advance notice to any of us about this. Now, this new policy also involves the subway system. And the last time I checked, the subway system stretches from Coney Island all the way up to the Bronx. And so it's important for us to know something like this, because we have been bombarded by questions about what's going to happen in our borough. Now, with the marijuana policy, we drafted it in April. We sent it over to the police commissioner in April, and we had discussions for months before we implemented it. The New York Times wrote a big story about it in April. So everyone knew that this was coming to Brooklyn. So I think that there's a distinction between what happened the other night and what happened back in 2014. And so we do have an obligation to do what's in the best interest of our borough, but we have one police department. And I don't understand why none of us knew about this before we read about it in the news.
A lot of us are on the same page, but we need the mayor or administration, we need the police commissioner to really interact with the council and with the district attorney's offices in a unified way.
New York City Councilmember Rory Lantzman from Queens is chair of the City Council's Court and Legal Services Committee. He says the way the city deals with low-level offenses cries out for a unified response.
The frustrations that some of the district attorneys felt with the announcement related to the pilot in Manhattan is something that the City Council felt as well. And I think D.A. Thompson is correct I don't want to put words into your mouth or get you in trouble, but identifying the culprit, as it were. It's not the individual district attorney's office. This city has one elected mayor, one administration, and as we try to navigate through these difficult criminal justice issues, with each of you, of course, having your own discretion and independence, it really would be helpful if we had an overarching guiding philosophy and approach rather than what we feel sometimes in the city council is both piecemeal, and as I said, when that plan was announced, in some ways a little bit oversold, not by your office, Mr. Vance, but by the city.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Today, the Utah branch of Planned Parenthood asked a federal appeals court to stop the governor from cutting off funding to the organization. They argue that the move was unconstitutional political retribution against an organization which he opposes. In the presidential race, it took Fox News to bring up abortion at a town hall meeting in Kalamazoo, Michigan on Monday.
I happen to believe that it is wrong for the government to be telling a woman what to do with her own body.
Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders ahead of today's Michigan primary.
I believe, and I understand there are honest people. I mean, I have a lot of friends, some supporters and some disagree with me. They hold a different point of view, and I respect that. But that is my view. And I'll tell you something which I don't like in this debate. There are a whole lot of people out there who tell me the government is terrible, government is awful, get government off our backs. My Republican friends want to cut Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, education. But somehow on this issue, they want to tell every woman in America what she should do with her body. I think that's enough. Yeah.
I guess the genesis of the question is that, there are some Democrats who say after 5 months, with the exception of the life of the mother or the health of the baby, that perhaps that's something to look at. You're saying no.
I am very strongly pro-choice. That is a decision to be made by the woman, her physician, and her family. That's my view.
And that's the view of women who gathered in the cold in Washington, D.C. last week as the Supreme Court heard arguments over access to abortion clinics.
What do we want? The Center for Reproductive Rights appealed a lower court ruling which would have shuttered all but one legal abortion provider in Louisiana, a state with 4.7 million people. Angela Hooten is with the Center for Reproductive Rights. She welcomed women to the Rally to Protect Abortion Access.
This is the most important abortion rights case in over two decades. It is a historical moment, and you are now a part of that history. So thank you for being here today, for coming from all over the country to peacefully stand in solidarity with my colleague, Stephanie Todi, as she argues this case in front of the Supreme Court.
The Center for Reproductive Rights said underhanded tactics to cut off women's access to safe legal abortion simply can't stand. And on Friday, the Supreme Court temporarily blocked a Louisiana law. It would have imposed regulations on doctors performing abortions. Critics say the law was aimed at shutting clinics. The Louisiana law, similar to a Texas law, would have forced abortion clinics to shut down by requiring physicians who perform the procedure to have admitting privileges within 30 miles of where the abortion is performed. Outside the high court, women told their stories.
My name is Dr. Sarah Immerschein, and I am an abortion provider.
Dr. Immerschein is on the board of NARAL, the National Abortion Rights Action League.
And do you know what I've learned after 40 years in medicine? Women's health is medical, not political.
Dr. Immerschein says her mentors remembered wards filled with injured and infected women and the many women who died before abortion was legal and available.
We must not forget their stories or their lives. And we must remember, women will seek abortion even when it is illegal. Abortion is medical, not political. Like every other medical procedure, we must let the experts, the doctors and researchers, determine best medical practices and keep American women safe.
To the world, I am an attorney who had an abortion. And to myself, I'm an attorney because I had an abortion.
Attorney Janet McAvoy.
That's how an amazing friend of the court brief began. Those words aren't mine, but they tell why I felt compelled to tell the Supreme Court about my abortion and why I, Janie Shulman, and 113 other lawyers signed that brief and submitted it to the Supreme Court. We all exercised our constitutionally protected right to have an abortion.
McAvoy says she never regretted her decision, nor does she feel ashamed. But she says she needed to speak out now because she's seeing state legislature after state legislature trying to take away a basic right which shaped her destiny. Sadie Hernandez is with Planned Parenthood in Texas.
Approximately one in every three women in the United States has had an abortion. One in every four women in the United States will be forced to carry their pregnancy to term due to financial reasons. An estimated one in every five women has visited a Planned Parenthood in her lifetime. Do the math. Abortion needs to not only remain safe and legal, but accessible. And places like Planned Parenthood and Whole Woman's Health and other abortion providers need to remain open.
Hernandez says she was inspired by Texas Senator Wendy Davis's filibuster a year ago in protest of the Texas anti-abortion bill.
Thanks to Governors Rick Perry and Greg Abbott and Senator Cruz, among others in the Texas Senate and whatever, Texas has cut off life-saving healthcare services.
Hernandez says Texas has cut off cancer screenings, HIV testing, and gutted sex education for those on the lower economic scale.
Our fight today, though, is bigger than Texas. We're fighting to repeal the Hyde Amendment so that everybody, no matter what your financial situation, can get a safe and legal abortion. We are fighting to include LGBTQ and trans and gender nonconforming and undocumented and bilingual people into the abortion conversation.
Andrea Hoots is a future OBGYN. She's with Medical Students for Choice.
I want to be a doctor who provides comprehensive reproductive care over the span of a woman's life. I want to discuss contraceptive options early and openly. I want to celebrate with women as they start families, knowing that I helped them transition to motherhood only when they were ready to start a family.
Poots decries laws like HB 2, the Texas House bill, which limits Texas women's access to reproductive health care.
Laws like HB 2 create higher costs, longer delays, and increased risk for women seeking abortion care. This is not how I would treat my sister, my mother, my friends, or neighbors. This is not how I should be forced to practice medicine, and this is not how you should be forced to receive care.
The Texas law being challenged is similar to the Louisiana law, which the U.S. Supreme Court put on hold. Both involve actions by the same federal appeals court, the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans. Abortion rights advocates are sure to keep up the pressure as the justices deliberate and prepare a ruling on the Texas case. This is expected by the end of June. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.